Superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Howdy, folks. This is good old JR Jim Ross. I want to thank you for downloading the Ross Report. And I certainly want to thank all the sponsors. We've got some great sponsors who make this possible every single week. Well, folks, if you've heard the Ross Report before, you know that I love to talk about DDP Yoga. Dallas has helped so many people from all walks of life. And, folks, remember this. There's an important thing. It can work for you, too. It can. If you haven't, head over to ddpyoga.com/Jim Ross and check it out right now. DDP Yoga. Folks, there are no actors, no models. It's just real people with real transformations. That's simple. For instance, check out Jared Mollenkopf, who DDP met on the streets of Utah. Jared had lost 190 pounds in 8 months doing DDP yoga. And then, fast forward 9 months later, and Jared's lost 313 pounds. Amazing. And it's true. And it works. There's no gimmicks. So don't wait. Go to ddpyoga.com/Jim Ross and check out all the great deals DDP has for the listeners of the Ross Report. And he takes really good care of you folks as well, no doubt. There's also the DDP Yoga Now app for working out on the go, available on iOS and Android. Again, I encourage you, do something good for yourself, as simple as going to ddpyoga.com/Jim Ross and be on your way to not only change your life, but to own your life. What was that address again? Well, that would be ddpyoga.com/Jim Ross.
He's considered the greatest broadcaster in wrestling history.
Yes, sir!
And now, WWE Hall of Famer Jim Ross, the legendary voice you heard calling every major wrestling match in human history, brings his famous friends to the podcast world.
Nice!
Welcome to the Ross Report.
Yes, indeed, Slobberknocker Audio is on the air. Hi, everybody. Thanks for downloading the Ross Report. Absolutely free for you. I know many of you went to Apple Podcasts. Hit that subscribe button. We appreciate that. Left a few 5-star ratings and a couple of comments. We appreciate that as well. Big show here today. You know, it's a massive week in my... I started to see my professional life. It's a massive week in all phases of my life. Meaning that Slobberknocker, my life in wrestling, is in bookstores now. Barnes & Noble got our book. Books a Million. Amazon killing it. They're shipping. They're doing a great job. So Amazon's a great source as well. It's available in audiobooks, ebooks, whole nine yards. So we're going to talk to Paul O'Brien, my Irish brother that bailed me out after the untimely death of Scott Williams, where everything fell into the lap of Paul O'Brien, whose amazingly creative and stimulating novels, Blood Red Turns Dollar Green series, is what led me to him. Unlikely relationship, but I think you're going to like what we produced in our book. So we'll talk to Paul O'Brien in just a few moments. But first, ladies and gents, here's what's on my mind.
It's time! It's time!
What's on JR's mind?
Okay, as you know, our autobiography, Slobberknocker, My Life in Wrestling, is now available wherever books are sold, including Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books a Million, and fine bookstores everywhere. Hey, look, this has been a long journey, man. Interesting journey. Heartbreaking at times. You know, I never saw poor Scott Williams' untimely passing coming. Obviously, neither did his family and his other friends. It was a shock, and it left us too soon. As big a wrestling fan as I've ever been around,
But thank God, hooked up with Paul O'Brien after reading Blood Red Turns Dollar Green. So the results is what's on the shelves. We love it. Hope you will too. Mick Foley said that I could tell that my book was going to be good. By the time I got through doing most of the promotion, I'd still like it. So far I have. And Amazon's doing a great job of getting it out there. I've had friends on Amazon Prime have killed it, done good. So I'm doing a lot of grassroots marketing, a lot of media for the book, including this week I'm on the Wrestling Observer with Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez. Appreciate them bringing me on for an hour on their radio show. And then I'm doing a lot of local radio all around the country. And then I'm doing the Audible podcast with Bruce Feldman and Stuart Mandel. That's a Fox Radio thing, I believe. And then I've done Fox Radio this week with Clay Travis, Outkicking Coverage. We're getting out there, and we're getting these tours are being scheduled. I should know something in a few days about where we're going. I know we're going to Houston and Chicago and Los Angeles and New York and Pittsburgh, I think. But there's a lot of places we're going. I just don't know where they are right now, but we'll have that information. I'm really going to put the effort out to do everything I physically can to make this book a success. And many of you know why I'm doing it. It's not, he's doing it for the money. Well, okay, wise ass. I'm doing it because I got this woman still in my mind that I was with for 25 years. And a lot of this book is about her. You kind of have to look for it, but there's a hell of a love story in this book. And it's not going to run off of wrestling fans, I can promise you. There's plenty of wrestling, plenty of stories, plenty of fun stuff. So I'm going to hit it hard. And it deserves that. All of Scott's efforts. My wife had a big part of this book. She had a huge part of my career. So I almost said I can't do it after she died. But I'm glad we did. Gosh, I'm glad we did. Remember, if you want signed copies of Slobberknocker, while they last, I'm told they're available at PremierCollectibles.com. PremierCollectibles.com has signed copies, and I believe they ship them anywhere. And then the audio version of Slobberknocker is available at audiobooks.com and at Amazon. I'm very curious and kind of anxious to see what you think about the audio book. I read it. I don't want to break my arm patting myself on the back, but the problem would be I had a hard time getting through it. And so we did a lot of pickups and started over. So I'm anxious to hear how it sounds, and because I haven't heard it either, but it's got a lot of emotion, real emotion in it, because I was reading about real things that affected my life and still affected this very day. But the book is out. Ebook, audio, hard copy, straight to roll. We're ready to rock and roll here. And, you know, there's a lot of really good books. I look at this like a lot of the podcasts. You know, I'm very up about promoting podcasts. Steve Austin's podcast, Chris Jericho's. There's a lot of guys. You know, Bruce Pritchard and Conrad's got a great one. My friend Tony Schiavone, Conrad. Oh, Connie, my boy. He looks like Tom DeLuise. He's so cherub. I love those cheeks. Connie. So they do a great job. But there's a lot of real good books right now. The Second Nature with Charlotte and Ric Flair's book. Big hit. Great read. Good story. Really good story. Chris Jericho's No is a four-letter word. Also another compelling read. That from the man that will be taking many of us on a cruise next fall. We'll have more on that, certainly. Considering I'm hosting that cruise. I don't get seasick either, kids. I didn't get more information on that if you want to go to ChrisJerichoCruise.com, by the way. ChrisJerichoCruise.com. And another, by the way, I haven't mentioned this much here, and I'd like to know more, talk more about it. A really good book, I thought. A.J. Lee's Crazy is My Superpower. It's a New York Times bestseller. Congratulations to A.J. Lee. And all these books are, along with Slobberknocker, can be ordered and quickly delivered from Amazon.com. So good time to be a wrestling fan for the product on television. And I would say some pretty good wrestling books out right now that you might want to check out. Much like the other wrestling podcasts that folks have. Jim Cornette's podcast is phenomenal. He's absolutely hilarious. Why, somebody has to put Cornette on, like, you know, MSNBC. He'd be phenomenal, wouldn't he? God almighty. You talk about ratings. I'd like to see Cornette and Rachel Maddow do something. That's a combination. That's a pair to draw to, as my daddy would say. So anyway, a lot of good podcasts, books, and I can't speak for all the talents to do these. I try to promote their products as much as I can. Eric Bischoff's got a good podcast. Lance Storm and Don Callis got a good one. MLW does a lot of good stuff. They got a big wrestling show this week. Check that out on digitally, MLW. So a lot of good stuff and good time to be a fan. This Sunday, WWE Hell in a Cell is going to be on in Detroit, the new, supposed to be really cool too, Little Caesars Arena in the Motor City, hosting his first WWE event. I believe that's right. In any event, it's the first major event there for WWE. It won't be the last. On the WWE Network, Hell in a Cell, strong card. When you look at this thing depth-wise and quality depth, that's always a key thing. There's one thing to have depth. It's another issue and a much better deal to have quality depth. This card has quality depth. Hell in a Cell matches. Kevin Owens and Shane McMahon will be a human demolition derby. It'll be stiffer than the Joey Chitwood thrill show. And then you have a Hell in a Cell match, which may steal the show. Usos versus New Day. Good stuff. I like that. They have good chemistry, those two teams. Really good. They're unselfish. They work hard, and they want to have the best match on the card. And why the hell not? Jinder Mahal defends the WWE title against Shinsuke Nakamura. I expect Mahal to win that match or retain the title. I'm thinking, but maybe not. Who knows? I don't have a feel for that match, so I'm going to be very transparent. I don't have a feel for it. But I think Mahal probably retains. And he's still on his journey to get, quote-unquote, over and established as the WWE champion. It ain't easy. It ain't automatic. Natalya and Charlotte should be a classic for the women's title, SmackDown women's title. If they're given the time to go do their business, it'll be terrific. And I wish them the best of luck. I like both those ladies. AJ Styles, U.S. title, Baron Corbin the challenger. This is really an opportunity, sublime opportunity for Baron Corbin. He's a jock. He's a former NFL player. You got a chance now to hunt with a big dog because ain't no better in-ring bell-to-bell worker in the world than AJ Styles. So, big boy, Baron Corbin, come get you some. Let's see what you've learned. Be aggressive and be a badass. And listen to AJ. Bobby Roode and Dolph Ziggler, interesting matchup. If that match is not good, it's just because the audience crapped on it for some reason. And that would be a shame. Unnecessary shame. Two really, really good talents in Roode and Ziggler. Cannot have a bad match. Oh, by hell, I didn't jinx them. And then we have Randy Orton, who apparently, from what he said on Edge and Christian's podcast, another good one, see, I'm plugging everybody today, is against Rusev, who apparently I'm supposed to dislike because he's from Bulgaria. And for the life of me, I can't figure out why I'm supposed to be pissed off the Bulgarians. If you know, tweet me, will you? At JRsBBQ. So, big show this week. We'll be checking that out. And I'll be joined by Jason Powell, ProWrestling.net, will join me next week to talk about Hell in a Cell and other items of business. I'm going to change that up a little bit, too. I think you're going to like next week's format a little bit. So, check that out. The creative and enterprising Young Bucks created a stir recently when they invaded WWE Raw in Cali, where the Bucks reside. And somebody asked me how I thought Vince McMahon might react to this somewhat bold promotional stunt. And my thought was that the WWE chairman would likely forget it even happened within a day or two, unless somebody reminded him. Meaning that it wasn't that big a deal. Let's don't go crazy here. It's not now, you know, I'm not talking about if there's marketing issues or things of that nature. I don't know all that legal stuff. And I ain't going to know because I don't want to know it. But I can tell you that the publicity stunt is what it was. I applaud it. The Young Bucks and their Bullet Club cronies remind me, folks, a little bit of some of the really, really talented but somewhat maverick old-school territory wrestlers who took calculated promotional risk. They played their hand pretty hard sometimes with the promoters. But they did promote in a grassroots way. The Bucks do that, certainly. While generally taking a significant role in their own creative. And certainly the Bucks have done that to their credit. And, you know, but sometimes I'll tell you, the taking care of your own creative sometimes will make you challenging to work with because you put a lot of pressure on yourself. It's your idea. Why is it your idea getting over? Maybe you shouldn't be creating your own ideas. I'm not sure about the T-shirt things and marketing stuff. Again, I don't care. Everybody's making money. I'm happy, including the Young Bucks who I like. But I can tell you this, by the way, don't think for one minute that the Young Bucks' entrepreneurial skills were overlooked whatsoever during the so-called invasion. Write that down in the book. I think they made the list. And maybe it's not a bad list. It's my take on it. I can see them in WWE someday, without a doubt. If they don't, I'll be shocked. They are two of the guys that have led the way this independent circuit and doing various bookings, whether it be indie shows or ROH or New Japan or combinations. A lot of guys are making good money right now. I'm so happy for them, no doubt. Very happy for them. Heard some unfounded rumors. I didn't quite get this, that WWE really wasn't overly motivated to do business creatively with Enzo Amore. I read this. I've read it online in many places as if it's true. And here's what I'll say about that. I'm not there. I don't have the hell, and neither most of you, right? We just read, we react, we observe. But here's the deal. If WWE wanted to not do business with Enzo Amore, they simply wouldn't. They can afford to send him home if they don't want to do business with him. If they don't want him around, they can afford to send him home and he'll get his weekly check until another direction, another decision is made. I see the guy closing Raw 2 weeks in a row, right? So is that the mark of somebody that the creator doesn't have anything for, or the company's getting, wringing their hands about what we do with this guy? I don't think so. So here's the thing about Enzo. He's a unique personality. He's pretty damn natural. He's a crazy son of a bitch, no doubt about it. But he makes you look. He's very unique in today's marketplace, folks. That's all I'm saying. And I do think that 205 Live, which I like, but I'd like to like it more. Are you with me on that? Do you feel me? Had you done fight a man and make love to a woman? I don't know if you had or not. Most guys wouldn't. But 205 Live needed a creative boost. Give me another reason to tune in. That's all. And Enzo might be able to supply what's needed. Let's wait and see. So I like the booking. I think it gives every cruiserweight in the company a goal, and that's to beat Enzo's ass and win the title. Wow. Man, that little chest gave him a human chest, made the title worth more. Now, with all that said, nonetheless, I still see Neville as the cornerstone for the 205 brand at this time, no doubt. In any event, big week, fun week, great conversation coming up with Paul O'Brien. I think you're really going to dig this. And, yes, we're trying to sell our book this week, but a lot of cool things going on. And, again, Sunday at Hell in a Cell, I'll be watching, probably doing some live tweeting. At JR's BBQ, and then on Monday night, Jason Powell and I will, after Raw, will convene and huddle and talk about Raw and Hell in a Cell and whatever else is on our mind. So that's that. And that, ladies and gentlemen, by golly, is what's on my mind.
Podcast One Sports presents Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast. Every Tuesday, you can hear Jack Harbaugh.
We're going to attack this day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
Jim Harbaugh.
What the hell's going on around here?
And JT Rogan share their stories from on and off the field. Past guests include John Harbaugh, ESPN's Adam Schefter, and Pardon My Takes, PFT, and Big Cat. So don't miss an episode of Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast. Every Tuesday, exclusively on PodcastOne.com and the new Podcast One app. Just a sample of what's coming to Podcast One Sports. The Ross Report.
Man, it is the middle of the night where my guest is as we record this. Paul O'Brien is in Ireland the writing guru. Paul, how are you this fine evening?
I am absolutely perfect, Jim. How are you?
Good. I'm good, thanks. Thanks for staying up late. I heard him say that one time on television. I think it's kind of cool. Thanks for staying up late with us.
My pleasure. Yeah. It's launched out here in Ireland. It might not be launched out with you yet, is it?
No.
Just because of the time difference.
No, it's right now for me, it's in the 8 o'clock hour.
Right.
8 p.m. So it's
2 a.m. here.
Yeah, so we're good. Now that we've established our time and where we are and who we are, how you been?
It's been an amazing journey, Jim, just because we are at launch day, past launch day, but I'm just looking back on the whole journey. And, it's been quite a trip so far, I have to
mm-hmm.
say.
Mm-hmm. It has
and,
been.
And the public is only going to get their hands on the book. I see a lot of buzz out there. I see a lot of, you know, great reviews. People are really enjoying this story. So I think it's kind of a mission accomplished as far as the writing part of this book is concerned for both of us plus Scott as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's been an emotional journey. I know I didn't. I didn't even mildly comprehend the worst case scenarios. I never thought about my wife getting killed 30 seconds from my house, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't, Scott seemed to be a healthy, sound body and mind guy. And, you know, heck, all of a sudden, bang, he's gone. So explain how this, how our partnership came about in your own words. You know, I written publicly about how I feel, you know, you're my Irish brother and you heard my voice. And you heard me, we plugged in. There was never an issue on content or philosophical, not one damn time.
Yeah.
We were on the same page and felt the same, that we wanted to do a honest book. We wanted to do a book that didn't shortcut on things that were important. So that told us right there, Paul, that we couldn't do my whole career in one book.
Yeah, it's so true, Jim. I mean, right back from the start for me, I wrote a series of wrestling novels called Blood Red Turns Dollar Green, and I was kind of hustling around the edges of wrestling, trying to get names such as yourself maybe to take a look at these novels, maybe tell your fans and followers about it. And I got some really great response from yourself and Bret Hart and William Regal and Finn Balor and Becky Lynch and so on. And if I'm not mistaken, I think it might have been those books that kind of spurred you into asking me on the Ross Report,
right?
A couple of years ago,
yep.
And then after the interview was over, you and I just kind of hung on the phone for about 20 minutes, and you started telling me about the book that you were writing, your autobiography, and you know, would I take a look? And I mean, I have to say, it was an absolute honor even to be asked to take a look at the few chapters that were kind of up on its feet at that stage. So you sent me on maybe a chapter or two, and then I cheekily rewrote one of the chapters between you and your father.
Yeah.
And the strange thing to say, Jim, is because there's a lot of miles between us, and there's a couple of years between us, but I absolutely got your story.
Wow.
The second that I saw it, the second that I read it, the second that I read the relationship between you and your father, I tossed this, you know, I know this story. I know JR on TV, and now that he's let me read the chapter about he and his father, I think I might be able to add something here. So I just made a few changes, and I sent them back to you. And I didn't hear anything for about a week, and I thought I had offended you. I thought, oh, no. You know, Jim Ross hates what I've done here. And but I was, you know, I was blown away to hear when you did call that both you and your wife Jan were touched by the way that I handled that chapter. And it was a pretty easy process from there, Jim. You know, you got Barry on the phone and we worked something out, and all of a sudden we had a tight writing team, both myself and yourself and of course Scott as well. So it was going to be a 3-man team. Almost like, you know, the old WCW dad. So.
Well, you know, Scott was so valuable in so many areas, but historical data.
Yeah.
You know, the one thing, another thing was a pet peeve of mine is that, and I'll preface this by saying that over the years, either because of my position in WWE as an executive or Hall of Fame guy that used to be an executive, I got every book that was published by anybody in our company or another company sent to me.
Yeah.
A lot of them wanted me to read it, which I was privileged and happy that they thought enough of my opinion to want me to read their book or have them on the podcast here and, you know, shoot the breeze and sell some books like we're doing tonight, quite frankly. You know, honestly. But Jan read all those damn books, cover to cover. I read some that I didn't finish. They tapped me out. They kicked my fat Oklahoma ass, and I'm done with you, book. I got through half of it, and then, you know, I looked at some pictures, and I'm done. But Jan, she made it all the way through. I remember coming to bed nights, many nights, where she was sitting there, and I could still see it in my face right now, this very minute, of her in that bed reading a book. So the thing that we wanted to do was she'd ask me things. Honey, is this true?
Yeah.
And I said, what is it? She'd read it. I said, no, it's not true. It wasn't a salacious thing about me.
Yeah.
It was like, did so-and-so really do such and such? No,
yes.
No. That fable has turned into fact over the years.
Yep.
So I wanted to write for us to, I think we accomplished being honest. I don't think we shortchanged any stories. And I think it gives people, I don't think you have to be an all-American or an all-Irish or an all-anything. You can just be a guy or a gal and get this book. Because look at my fat ass. I'm not no star athlete, for God's sakes. You know, I'm just a guy who was a wrestling fan that had the ability to yarn a story.
Yeah.
And tell a story and weave the story and the fabric of that story into your psyche a little bit. So that was all that was. It wasn't. And I had two great-grandfathers, as you and I talked about, that they gave me I went to a prep school. I tell them big, long stories. One of the things that's been tough about this thing is I didn't realize that when what we wrote was going to be so hard for me to read.
Yeah. I think that's a testament to you, though, Jim. You know, like I was kind of, maybe at the start, I was kind of, you know, asking you to move a little bit more into the personal. You know, let us know Jim Ross. You know, we all know and love JR from all the years that we've seen him on various TV shows and, you know, wrestling events. But in fairness to you, you dove into that. You know, you gave me everything that I asked for. You answered every question that I had. You know, because I wanted to layer the amazing wrestling stories with this journey that you spoke about, which is, like, I couldn't believe, for instance, that Jim Ross used to play wrestling with, you know, toy soldiers as action figures. Mm-hmm. Like, I used to do that. I was doing that in Ireland, you know, years later. And I just thought, you know, like, we have a commonality here. You know, there's a human element to this book that I think, like you said, Jim, it doesn't matter where you are in the world, and it doesn't matter if you're male or female, and it actually doesn't even matter what age you are.
No.
If you want to read a story about a guy who came from humble beginnings, you know, at one stage we were talking about, you know, from the farm to the garden, as in Madison Square Garden. And I think that really encapsulated for me, you know, your journey to get from a farm to Madison Square Garden was just such an amazing story. I actually couldn't wait to help write this story.
You did what great wrestling fans have been doing for decades, long before you and I got in the game, and that's to emotionally invest in the product that they're supporting into whatever level of their life that would mean. It could just mean buying a ticket and going to the event, or it could mean being a participant.
Yep.
But you obviously had a long-term love affair with pro wrestling to some degree, I'm thinking, right?
Absolutely. It's been 30 years plus. And, you know, growing up on an island like Ireland 30 years ago, you know, people talk about how hard it was to get wrestling content. I mean, I literally had to go to the next country. So I had to go to the UK. And I'd fill up my suitcase full of Coliseum home videos. And I'd bring them back to Ireland. And then I was the guy that everybody knew had the wrestling
talent. I smell a bootleg deal.
Exactly. So everyone used to knock my door and say, hey, can I swap you this video for that video? Or I mean, and I still am. My daughter is a wrestling fanatic. My wife loves it. We're a wrestling family, you know. We're proud of it. We travel over to the U.S. We go to WrestleMania. We go to the, you know, the live events. We buy the T-shirts. We're in. We're lifers.
Yeah, you buy shirts. Foam fingers are there, baby.
Exactly.
Was there a storyline? Or is there a rivalry, a feud? As I like to, though, wrestling magazines like to talk about the feuds.
Yeah.
You know, as if these two guys that were feuding at the Garden, if they saw each other at Walgreens or the grocery store, they'll break out in the damnedest fight you ever saw. Put the children away, my God! It could happen any moment, ladies and gentlemen. But so who was it that rivalry or that star that captivated you and opened your eyes to this crazy world of pro wrestling?
Well, for me, it was probably, you know, 1987-ish, around that era. So, you know, it was coming up. But, like, I think the most perfect WWE or F pay-per-view for me was SummerSlam 1991. It just had everything that WWF was. It had, you know, the wedding and the great wrestling and, you know, with the Perfect and Bret Hart match. You know, they had the great six-man kind of opener, you know, the Boss Man versus the Mountie with all the vignettes after that.
And, yeah.
You know, so for me, Jim, once I saw that as a total package. Like, I loved wrestling, and I was mostly getting wrestling matches. But once I saw that this pay-per-view was kind of telling the story from one match to the next to them, I think that was the first time that I got it. You know, it was like, it's the difference between hearing a single on the radio versus hearing a whole album. When I heard the whole album of SummerSlam 1991, I just, this is it. I'm totally in. And at that stage, I had been watching for, you know, maybe 3 or 4 years.
That's a real interesting perspective. Real unique way, and I would say a spot-on way, of how many of us wrestling fans should look at the product a little bit more. Look at the album.
Yeah.
And not just one song off the album.
Yeah.
Look at the... So, in other words, I think maybe in my clumsy way, I'm saying that when you see an angle shot,
yep,
as a fan, or we watch something develop on television that we don't understand, or at that moment, we're not crazy about.
Yep.
What we're obligated to do, at least my take on this is be patient.
Yeah.
Let it play out. If it plays out poorly, have at it.
Yep.
If it's halted, if it's abruptly stopped, if it becomes totally illogical, then, you know, have at it. Do what you love to do in your 140 characters or less.
Yep, I agree. And then I think the onus as well is on the, you know, is on the TV show or whatever, because I know, for instance, you love Red Donovan, and, you know, there's amazing serialized TV out there at the moment. I think then it's incumbent upon the person who's asking you to be patient, so whether that's WWE or whether that's Showtime or Red Donovan, that they pay it off for you at the end. And this is what I really loved, again, just about SummerSlam 1991, that there was, you know, the start of that Bret Hart, Mr. Perfect match was a beautiful kind of slow build. But these guys were so amazingly good at what they did that I could have watched them building that match for a couple of hours, and I knew I was going to get the big payoff at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what enthralled me as a fan and still does to this day. Well, you know, when there's certain...
You know, I'm a big, big fan of today's wrestling.
Yep.
I really am. I'm a big fan of our wrestling population.
Mm-hmm.
The men and the women that are in the business, and they're doing their thing, oftentimes not in the most desirous ways of small payoffs and long trips and no amenities, things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
Bad rings.
Yeah.
Clumsy ass opponents. But I admire their will, their grit, and their desire to live their dream. And some of them are living their dream. Everybody should come to the realization that everybody's not going to headline WrestleMania.
Yeah.
But there's wonderful dreams that one can experience without doing that. But that would always be my goal if I was a wrestler. The one clean cut deal, Paul. What do you want to do, kid? I want to headline WrestleMania. Why, if you're a wrestler, why wouldn't you want to do that?
I couldn't agree more. And I think, you know, that as I got to know wrestlers and I got to know people in the wrestling business, the one thing that I has struck me is the difference between people who get to that high level and not, sometimes isn't a physical thing. And a lot of times it's a confidence thing or it's a mental thing. And it's quite fascinating for someone like me, because I'm a therapist here in Ireland. I have been for about 15 years, a cognitive therapist. And to see and hear people of, you know, they come across as such megastars on TV. And then, you know, you kind of talk to them and you realize that some of the issues, Jim, between getting there and not getting there can be all upstairs. You know, they can have amazing bodies, amazing movesets. Yeah, they can, you know, the amazing psychology, but... and that to me was actually the most fascinating thing from spending a long periods of time with people that do this for a living.
The fine line. There's a fine line. Yeah. You know, the old adage, oh, there's a fine line between good and evil. There's a fine line between genius and insanity. There, you know, all that. Fine line. Okay. Well, there is a fine line sometimes between a talent making it and not making it. In my experience, it's more often not mental. Not physical.
Yeah.
It's not because she said, well, man, if he's only 2 inches taller. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, come on, stop.
Yeah.
Stop making excuses for yourself. But I think that these kids are so talented athletically. They eat better. They're smarter. They're smarter on travel. They're learning how to, and I use the term manipulate, but not in a negative way, but to work within and manipulate to their advantage, social media, selling their products, marketing their appearances, interact with the folk out there, which is imperative.
Yeah.
I've said this, and it's been taken in a variety of ways. I said that the big dog in the yard, the WWE, is always going to be the big dog in the yard. But that doesn't mean anything other than that.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean you can't play in the game. It doesn't mean other teams can't make money. Other companies can't make money.
Yeah.
None of that. It doesn't mean you can't enjoy it. If you got good wrestling, you're going to find a TV home.
Yeah.
And if you, but that's the heartbeat. That's the issue right now. Do you guys get Impact Television, Impact Wrestling over there in Ireland?
We do. Yeah. We got it through the UK.
Is it on a decent station?
No, it's not. and it's quite hard to guess. You know, most of the Impact wrestling I would see would be online. Like, I, just because I'm a wrestling nerd, I would go and seek it out.
Okay.
But it's not one of those programs, Jim, that if you're just flicking that you'd end up, you know, on it and think, oh, what is this amazing product? It's really kind of hard to get this side of the water, which is unfortunate. It really is, you know, because there's some amazing talent.
Yeah, it is. Here's the thing, and I believe wrestling fans should unite in this one sentiment of this whole damn show, other than buying our book. You know, come on, you know, help a brother
that's
out.
A given.
Help a brother. I have a brother out here.
The twins need new shoes, Jim.
Yeah, baby needs new shoes, Paul. Baby needs new shoes. You've heard that a few times, and that would be to do our best to support all pro wrestling.
Yep.
Now, that doesn't mean you have to watch them all for the same number of hours or invest the same amount of money or the same investment of time. If nothing else, you're not knocking what you perceive to be inferior products.
Yeah.
There's got to be better use of our time than to go on relentless and countless rants about what's wrong with everything. And God Almighty... Hey, isn't that kind of the way of the damn world right now?
It is. It really is, Jim. I got sucked into it myself a few years ago, where I just went through this, like, everything is terrible and nothing is worth watching. And then I just had to take a little step back. And I have to say, I love professional wrestling. I want to see it thrive. You know, we have an amazing company here in Ireland as well called Over the Top Wrestling. You know, Jordan Devlin, Session Martina, just amazing, amazing wrestlers. And it's kind of at that level that I started to find my love for it again.
Mm-hmm.
And then as my daughter got older, and she now loves WWE, we sat down and watched all the Mae Young Classic, which were fantastic as part of, Jim. Just last night we finished it. And, you know, that's where my love for WWE now is, that I can sit on my sofa with my daughter and we can have some, you know, father-daughter time. And, you know, she gets to ask me all the weird and wacky questions about professional wrestling because she loves it. And, you know, that's what it should be. It should be a tool for bringing families together, you know, whether you're going to the shows or whether you're sitting down at home. In my opinion, that's probably, you know, where WWE is heading, which is to get the whole family involved. I think that makes great business sense for them, but also as well, it helps grow out the product.
Very logical. It's business 101. However, there will be some of my audience that will be listening.
Yep.
That will say, but you guys, you old dudes,
yeah.
You know, you guys, your time has come, it's gone. And
yeah.
Because anybody knows that TV-14 is going to automatically get you better ratings just by being TV-14. And I'm thinking, okay, hold on here now. Let's reevaluate that statement.
Yeah.
That means that in my boyhood hero, John Wayne could be in any movie and mm-hmm. it would be a hit. And that was proven to be false.
Some of the most famous and, you know, some of the highest rated TV shows ever are nowhere near TV-14. You know, you have your lighthearted comedies like Friends. I mean, the big program around the U.S. at the moment is This Is Us, which is, you know, it's just a sentimental, sweet, show that has nothing to do with TV-14.
Paul, here's the thing.
Yeah.
Is someone that is sticking their flagpole in the turf, as Baker Mayfield did at Ohio State? You don't know anything mm-hmm. about that, but some of my friends do. It is what it is. It's my show, and I throw that shit in when I want to. So if someone is hanging their hat, so to speak, on the fact that TV-14 is an automatic hit, and they're saying essentially that roster of Austin and Rock and Triple H and Taker and Shawn and DX, all those guys, Foley, Jericho, you know, shall I go on, that played ball in that Attitude Era, that was a talent thing. It had nothing to do with TV-14. Now, that talent coming together and thrown into a mixture became very combustible, which then created a TV-14 feel, and it was a TV-14, edgy, kind of raunchy. I get that.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You know, so, hey, I can't tell you how many conversations I have with my late mother about, you know, she was okay with it, but her older lady friend that was over watching wrestling to see Jimmy on TV was shocked at the women in those little skimpy bikinis.
I can imagine.
Yeah, puppies and all that stuff, right?
Puppies, yeah. So, I think the thing about the TV-14 era, Jim, I think, and as a fan myself, like, you know, who went through that era, is wasn't so much like the blood and the bikinis and all that. It was the you never know what's going to happen type TV. You know, that's the bit I miss about today's wrestling. Now, I understand why it's gone, and I understand why it's all a lot more ordered than it was. But, you know, at that time, when you turn on Monday Night Raw, you had no idea what was going to happen. You know, and everybody seemed to have, you know, a character or a reason for being there, even the guys that were a little bit lower down or... And I think that type of thing, when I talk to wrestling fans now, they just kind of want that, you know, that spontaneity back, that sense of, you know, like, take me on a journey, you know, where not just WWE, but, you know, just programming in general now is quite a lot safer than it was then. You know, and again, we know why that is, but I think that's where people are probably going with the TV-14 thing.
Well, it's just fond memories. You're right, too, Paul. I'm just saying that this is just probably, for some of them, it conjures up fond memories.
Yeah.
You know, I run into people that are big-time network professionals. They're involved in massive companies.
Yep.
That were Attitude Era, Monday Night Raw fans.
Yeah.
I mean, devout.
Yep.
So, and they take pride in that trivia knowledge. Now, they have since migrated or faded away.
Yep.
But they're older. They have children. They have a job. Mm-hmm. Life changed.
Yeah.
And sometimes when our life changes, wrestling doesn't go with us immediately.
Yeah.
You send for it later when you're set up and ready to, you know, it's kind of like the old days, you know, back in the day where people were coming to America, you know, the land of opportunity.
Yeah.
And then they'd send for their family when they got kind of a couple bucks saved up, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. So, yeah. We Irish have done that, yeah.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Speaking of that, did you have any relatives that migrated and made America their home?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've just recently traced my family tree back to the 1700s, and a lot of branches of my tree went over to the U.S. and made New York in particular their home. I love the U.S. I vacation there every year. You know, I have done for probably the last 15 years, so I can definitely see the appeal, Jim. You know, I dearly love Ireland, but I do love getting on that plane and getting over to your country and I think wrestling, in a strange way, it all comes back to wrestling. A lot of my vacations are planned around wrestling events, you know. We head to Florida. We love to go to NXT. You know, we love to catch some of the live events. And then if there's a WrestleMania or whatever, the last couple of years, I've been lucky enough to be invited over and get to see the whole backstage thing as well. And, you know, that's been a real thrill for me. You know, I got to go to the Hall of Fame. It's been a real journey since Blood Red Turns Dollar Green came out. I mean, the wrestling community, the WWE community have fully embraced me and, kind of given me some of the best memories I've ever had with my family, to be honest.
Well-deserved, quite frankly, my friend. Well-deserved.
Thank you.
Now another, we're going to have a best-selling book here. We'll talk more about Slobberknocker, My Life in Wrestling. And the funny thing, the book's already getting a little bit of a personality and maybe an ego because it prefers just to be called Slobberknocker. And that's what I'm getting from the media, Slobberknocker. So My Life in Wrestling is there, but it's not being said much. But we're going to talk more about our book, some of Paul's thoughts on it, some things that may have surprised him, some things that were clarified, what have you, but more about the book without giving it away. So we got some good stuff to talk about. And today's WWE as well. They have a big pay-per-view coming up this weekend, Hell in a Cell. We'll make touch on that momentarily. And we'll do that, folks, when we come back after you hear from one of our sponsors that's been with us since day one. And they make this podcast possible along with our other sponsors, and that is TrueCar. Well, folks, when you're looking to buy a car, it's important that you are getting real pricing on actual inventory. Now, doesn't that make sense? Real pricing means exactly what you're going to pay for this vehicle and that vehicle is in stock. Real pricing on actual inventory makes all the sense in the world. You're probably thinking, well, how could you think of any other way? Trust me, there are plenty of other ways to make car buying a pain in the keister. Often enough, it's not the case as people configure cars online only to find out later that they're just not available. Actual inventory, you got to have it available, right? With TrueCar, you get real pricing on actual inventory. This is not pricing from TrueCar, but from an actual dealer, him or herself, and even more so, a local certified dealer of your choosing that is committed to offering you a competitive market price. TrueCar users are more likely to enjoy a faster buying process when they connect with TrueCar certified dealers. Just makes all the common sense in the world. Folks, there are over 13,000 TrueCar certified dealers nationwide. Well, when you're ready to buy, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. And remember, as Gordon Solie might say, well, some features are simply not available in all states. But thank God, Jen is.
My name is Raven, professional wrestling superstar, raconteur extraordinaire, and master of the Lambada, the forbidden dance. Come join me and my sidekick, Busby, for a live podcast of The Raven Effect. Yes, sirree, The Raven Effect. My podcast with Busby, that's live, on Thursday, October 5th at 9:30 as part of the LA Podcast Festival Preview Night at the Hollywood Improv. Come join us for this most momentous occasion. Tickets are just $15. That's it? I think we should charge more. Anyway, they're available at hollywood.improv.com. Hollywood.improv.com. Again, it's The Raven Effect live. Easy for you to say. At the Hollywood Improv on Thursday, October 5th at 9:30 p.m. Go to hollywood.improv.com for tickets and a free cookie. But there's no free cookie? Oh, well, quote The Raven, nevermore.
A lot more ground to cover with my writing partner, Paul O'Brien. Slobberknocker, My Life in Wrestling. It stores everywhere right now. Jump on it at Amazon as well. And I just want to remind you that we thank you so much for subscribing to our show at Apple Podcasts. You just never miss an episode when you do that. It'll be automatically downloaded to the device of your choosing, your phone or your tablet. Cost you nothing. It's a big deal for us, and I want to thank you for doing it. And a lot of you have, and I thank you for it.
This is the Ross Report.
All right, back here on the Ross Report, Slobberknocker Audio indeed. It's late night as we record this, late last night in the gangland hideout of Frank Nitti. Paul O'Brien is my writing partner, and he is. If I could tell you this, and I don't know how, I believe that the way that we formatted this book, Paul, that there's very nothing's easy, and nothing good is ever easy, quite frankly.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's when you screw yourself in life.
Yeah.
Boy, that
yeah.
was easy.
Yeah.
Okay, if it was easy, you got two questions to ask. Was it really easy, or was it really worth it?
Yeah.
If we're going to do a second book, if we do a second book, it's got to be same team we have here now, you and me.
Yep.
And, boy, there's some fertile ground to talk about after we close the chapter on in this book. I mean, it gets really juicy after this.
It does, and you know, there was so much juice in this one as well. I mean, I know you were talking about in your link before what surprised me with the book. One of the things that really surprised me, Jim, that I didn't know, and I consider myself like a wrestling nerd, was just how much Paul Heyman loves Jim Ross. I had the privilege in researching the book to get on a phone call with Paul Heyman for about 3 or 4 hours. And I was struck by just how much he loves you as a person, as a human being, how he's never forgotten the stuff that you did for him in WCW when you were protecting him, when you were sticking up for him when nobody else would. He has never, ever forgotten that. And he got quite emotional just talking about his love for you.
Wow.
So that really struck me. Now, I know, like, because I kind of bought into the relationship that you two guys have on TV, you know, especially in...
It's pretty organic. And combustibly organic. Or organically combustible, I guess, be a better description. He brought out things in me that other partners over the years did not.
Yeah.
And that is not an indictment on the other partners I had, namely Jerry Lawler, who I had my longest tenure with.
Yep.
And
mm-hmm.
to go any farther than to look at how many hours of live primetime television that Jerry and I did and how many years speaks for itself. I mean, it is amazing in that regard. And at a what I'd like to think at a high level, considering the time, you know, the Turner WCW thing, the Monday Night Wars, you know, all that stuff. The storytellers really had to be in place to get everybody over as best they could. And so I thought we provided a nice service. I was glad that we were available to do it because, you know, Vince took great care of us financially. I mean, it was great money-wise.
Mm-hmm.
But what I like is that money somewhere in my bank, okay?
Yeah.
But those memories right here in my heart.
Yeah.
I remember going. I remember those Monday nights. I remember getting my fat ass back to the hotel and watching Nitro at midnight.
Yeah.
So just out of, I don't know, obsession, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing while you were doing that in real time, Jim. Like, I was a new father. I was up at those ungodly hours because we used to get Monday Night Raw here live at 2 a.m., I think it started that. And, you know, I used to offer. I'm probably the only father in the whole world. I used to offer to get up with my crying baby so I could come down. I could switch on Monday Night Raw. I would turn it down really low, and I would feed her bottle, and she and I watched wrestling. And she's 18 years old now. We're still doing the same thing, minus the bottle, of course.
Yeah.
But, you know, I know because I've spent a little bit of time with you. We've done a show in Orlando this year around WrestleMania time. I see the love and the passion that the fans have for you. But I totally understand it. It was a weird thing for me because, you know, I was that guy as well who was on the other side of the TV screen listening to JR and Jerry Lawler walk us through this program that we adored for so many years. And then to see the other side of it, which was, you know, fans queuing up to get a moment with Jim Ross to tell him just how much he means to them. Like, I totally understood where those fans were coming from.
Yeah, that's nice. Well, it's been a really this whole book. I'm gonna always look back, on this book and say that was one of the most compelling and emotional, and challenging times in my entire life.
Yeah,
because new venture. I wasn't in the WWE envelope.
cocoon, whatever you want to say, the corporate cocoons that we that people talk about in Wall Street and their companies. You know, I was I stepped outside that bubble to try to get a book published on my own.
Yep.
And then my writing partner, our writing partner, but he wasn't he wasn't our writing partner too long. It was And boy, I tell you, you know, people don't understand too. You know, you got I don't know how much all those transcripts, all those notes. My God, what are you gonna, what are you going to do with all that stuff?
Well, I'm going to keep all that. It was I counted it up. It was over a quarter of a million words. Came in kind of bits and fragments, and you know, so for me, Jim, it was kind of like the jigsaw puzzle of okay, you know, what has already been done here, what needs to be done, piecing all that together. It was almost like you know the I had the cardboard out, you know, like mapping the scene, you know, pinning up this. Okay, well, this run seems to be, you know, we have the facts behind that. We need facts for this. We need to do the storyline for this section. So for me, it was, and I had never written any nonfiction before, you know, so I'm a fiction guy. I've written three novels and 20 plays and all that, but it's all fiction. So when you have somebody's life, their life story in your hands, and of course you and I, like I can't go down and knock your door and say, hey Jim, I forgot this, you know, it's, we have a few miles between us. And what people might not know is that like you and I have only met, you know, maybe for a grand total of 2 hours, face to face, you know, so God bless technology. We were able to jump on.
Because I don't have that feeling at all. I feel like we've known each other for years. And I can talk to you about anything, and we have pretty much have. And anything, you know, when I was doing the audio version, and I come across certain things that we put down, and and one was we didn't dwell on it, we didn't poor me it. I didn't need a telethon or a fundraiser, you know, having an issue that I knew was an issue. After a while, I caught it on the prescription medications. And the funny thing is that people are going to think, well, JR is going, he's working every day. And I was working pretty much every day. But I never bit. That's not a bitch. And people say, oh, JR is bitching, but he worked all the time. Yeah, I loved it. I'd worked 8 days a week if there were 8 days. That's just me, man. People probably think, well, he's on prescription meds. What was he taking? I bet it was speed because he's working all the time. And the, it's just the opposite. It was Ambien and Xanax. And their good friend Crown Royal.
Yeah, they do go hand in hand.
I think the prescription medication thing will be news to a lot of people. And I think we covered that. I don't know what more we could have said about it. I mean, of course, the hay's in the barn now with the books printed, books out. But I thought we covered that. I didn't run away from it.
No, and you were fantastic. That's, the, you know, just at the start, I was saying that, like, anything that I asked you, you know, and sometimes we had to go deep, you know, sometimes we had to ask those questions, you know, was this an issue for you, Jim? Or, you know, how will we phrase this? How will we, and you were just like, just say it, just tell the story. You know, there was no putting a shine on this. There was no trying to polish it up to make it look better than it was or make it look worse than it was. It just, it was what it was. So let's write this thing and let's make it compelling. And I think that's every chapter that we started off. It was like, yeah, this is an amazing story, but how do we make this compelling? Like, how do we tell this in such a way that we're going to pull in any reader, you know, huge wrestling fans, but also as well, like a wrestling fan's wife or partner, or, you know, how do we get them curious to pick up the book after, you know, their partner or loved one has finished with it? And I think that's what we set out to do, Jim. I think we wanted to make this entertaining. I think we wanted to make this compelling. I think we wanted to tell a story of a, you know, at that time, a boy who grew up in a, you know, a rural farm in Oklahoma, who then made it to, you know, be on our TV screens for, you know, the run that you had was phenomenal. And then how do we do that? By cramming it with, you know, great wrestling stories and stuff that you'd only see in wrestling, you know. Like, I think you even identified who might be the first person in the whole world to wear a mullet. And I just thought that that was fantastic, you know, our traveling hairdresser.
And, sitting
down in Pat Patterson's basement, you know, speaking of hairdressers and, you know, sitting in Ric Flair's limo and, you know, just amazing stories.
It was
That was such a fun time, and all those times. See, and here's the deal. You mentioned those buzzwords. Mm-hmm. Pat Patterson's basement.
Yeah. Well,
I can shut my eyes, I'm right back there.
Yeah.
It was very vivid. It was a very pleasant memory. It was fun. We laughed. We got high. We smoked some.
Yep.
Well, you know, Pat didn't. Pat was never a smoker, but some of us were passing, and his former partner, Louie, was a connoisseur, man. So it was part of my journey. Here's the thing about this deal. I don't know if it's a cool story. Here it is, kids. It's a true story.
Yeah.
It really probably isn't a cool story because this is something I'd suggest that you do. You know, I told my daughters that, see, I have never sat down with them and gone over what's in this book. Mm-hmm. Not 1 second.
Yep.
I didn't ask them for any permission. I didn't ask them for any feedback. They want to write a Daddy Dearest book someday, have at it.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're not. But point is, I didn't want them to know how I perceive myself, my ability to be a father. I've never, to this day, as we speak this moment, been overwhelmed with the kind of father that I am.
Yeah.
Because I think I'm a good father now, but yeah. I can't make up for those lost years where everything was work, work, work.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was almost a pain in my ass to come home for Christmas. It's sick. It's sad. It's not even a good thing. Yeah. But the business had me by the short hairs, as Grandpa would say, and I didn't fight back. So shame on me. It's on me. It's not on the business.
And that was part of your story as well. Like when you left the wrestling business, you know, you had that same drive that you had when you were in the wrestling business. You know, so I found that as well as I was writing the book. I was just thinking, well, you know, JR is just one of these personalities that, you know, Muhammad Ali said once that if he was going to be a bin man, he would be the best bin man in the whole team. And, you know, I get that. I understand that. I'm a workaholic myself. So, you know, I can definitely relate, Jim.
I think we've done well, my friend. I think we've done well. And I'm doing a lot of media. And people always ask about if we're going to do book signings in the UK. All the book signings, for those of you that are listening and wondering, wherever it may be, all the book signings are being formulated as we speak. If you'll follow me on social media, kids, Facebook, Jim Ross, BBQ, same for Instagram. And, of course, I actually do my own Twitter, for better or for worse, at JRSBBQ. Point of that little plug there is that I'll keep you informed of where I'm going to sign books. And there'll always be the information on my website, JRSBBQ.com. So there's that. Tell us the latest on Blood Red Turns Dollar Green, folks. I looked at it. It has so much texture to it. And actually being in a wrestling territory, actually growing up in an office that Paul was writing about, I got it. I got this. I smelled it.
Yeah.
Okay? So I smelled it.
Yeah.
And there are times when I walk into certain places and I get a hint of that smell again. And all it is stale cigars. It's been layered in your room for days on end, and in your clothes and in the furniture and your whole damn thing. So tell us, what's the latest on Blood Red? Because I know there's so many exciting things. It's such a great product. And I told a lot of people that I know, I've been so, this is a hit somewhere. Somebody's got to fix this. So what's going on there?
Well, I'm glad to say that it's gone, you know, the Hollywood way, Jim. You know, there's a very, very large company with a very, very large personality who has, you know, shown huge interest in it. So our hope, anyway, our want is that we want to turn this into a TV series. You know, for your listeners who might not know, Blood Red Turns Dollar Green is a crime series set in the territorial days of professional wrestling. So I was amazed, Jim, and this is like where you and I are kind of linked. So before you and I ever hooked up to write your story, I listened to a story that you told, that you were at a convention, and you know, some of the old timers were talking about how to get rid of this new guy on the block, Vince McMahon. And if I remember correctly, you were in the bathroom stall, and you had to lift your feet up off the ground so they wouldn't. They wouldn't know that anybody was in there listening to their plan of how to deal with this young whippersnapper who was coming in and changing the business.
All right. I kept my seat, but I raised my feet off the ground so it looked like the stall was empty.
And when I heard you tell that story and I saw that visual, I thought, how has nobody ever picked up on this before? Like, how do you tell the organized crime story, but in the professional wrestling business? You know, because I have heard you call it over the years, you know, the nonviolent mafia, which is absolutely perfect. Now, of course,
it was. It's not anymore, but it used to be. That's like saying the mafia is the same as it always was in Las Vegas, and God bless everybody in Las Vegas.
Yeah, but
that's what's just amazing. I'm just heartbroken. I have seriously thought about moving to Las Vegas on more than one occasion, and still entertain those thoughts for some business opportunities that may be presenting themselves. But no matter where it is, no matter what country it is, people losing their lives senselessly thinking, I'm going to go out to a simple, safe musical concert.
Mm.
And I can't come home alive. It's amazing.
It is crazy times.
So anyway, but the Blood Red, I just think that, there's guys out there that have that are doing very well in Hollywood that have wrestling backgrounds and that are very creative. So I'm very excited about the future of that franchise. And I think that's how you got to look at it. It's a franchise.
It definitely is. And the world is so big. Even when I was talking to certain Hollywood production companies, you know, they were saying that the world is so big and so rich that, you know, you could tell this story in different corners of even the U.S., never mind the world, but different corners of the U.S. Because, as you know, Jim, better than most anybody, that all the territories had a different flavor.
Yep.
You know, they all had a different, different boss. They all had, like, different climate, different payoffs, different distances between the shows. And so, you know, I do think that there's a universe there, and this is what everyone is looking for at the moment. I do think, you know, there's a good 5-6 seasons easy, and then, you know, you can widen it out past that. So I think it has a lot of potential, Jim. I think, the right people are interested, if you smell what I'm cooking. And
I do.
I think that's always good.
We're going to keep our ear to the ground on that deal, because I just think it's a natural. Paul, tell everybody how they can get your books. There are three of them in the series. What would you say? Sequels? Is that what? Is that?
Yeah. They run parts 1, 2, and 3.
Right, there you go.
I suppose in the best place at the moment to get any book is on Amazon, so you can get it kind of worldwide on Amazon. I do know in North America, then you can get it in most bookshops. If you go to paulobrien.info, it has all the links there, so you can get your iBooks, or you can get it from Amazon or Barnes & Noble. So all the links are on the website, paulobrien.info.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. paulobrien.info. I mentioned before we went to the break, the ITV project. We're coming up a couple, 10 months ago, we had New Year's Eve, did the 2-hour special on ITV. Really unique to me that they aired it on New Year's Eve, because, you know, a lot of people have, even though my dad always called it amateur night, a lot of people have plans, or they might not be the hit of the ball if they want to sit on and watch wrestling.
Yeah.
On New Year's Eve. You want to what? we're gonna do what? So but the thing about it is that, and somebody mentioned this to me the other day on one of the interviews I was doing, the ITV thing. I said, look, I don't know where that whole project is, but I do know that the executives at ITV that were working on this love wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And they dearly love wrestling. And they truly believe that a pro wrestling show on their network would do big business. And I concur. So I don't know who's going to put, or if anybody's going to put, a show on ITV. But for a lot of folks that aren't familiar with it, Paul, don't realize what a monster it is. You're there. You're in Ireland, but that's the other magic. The ITV doesn't care where, because they get you there too, right? I mean,
yeah, they do. Absolutely. Yep.
It's a monster.
It is, Jim, and it's such a tradition. You know, I know William Regal, I follow him on Twitter, and, he has some amazing stuff from the old World of Sport days where he would have started out with some of the legends, you know, Johnny Sant and Rocco and those guys, Mick McManus.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up loving that show. I would dearly love to see it back. And in a strange way, I don't know how this would all work, Jim, but I would love to see William Regal involved with that, I think. I don't know whether he has any interest in it, but he has such a passion for that time. He has such a passion for, you know, English wrestling. He has such a passion for those who helped him rise up that I think he or, you know, someone like Robbie Brookside would be ideal to be at least involved. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether WWE would like to get in bed with ITV or not.
But, well, here's the thing I'd say, and I don't know what their deal is, but why not?
Yeah, I agree.
Is it totally impossible? Well, no.
No.
Is it likely? Probably not. But
yeah.
But you never know. It depends on how bad all the entities would enjoy doing business. But I also know that WWE's got a very long and successful relationship, too, with Sky.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I don't know how an entirely different league or different show would fit that scenario contractually, as far as exclusivity is concerned. So there would be a lot of things at play. But the point wasn't to try to marry WWE to ITV. The point is the ITV project, I got the taste of it. I got a little bit of, you know, some time there.
Yep.
I loved it. And I could see and I could feel, more importantly, there's something there with a fun one-hour show on a Saturday afternoon. It would kill.
It would, and it would get monster ratings, you know, because it's just on traditional TV. I mean, it's not, you know, you don't need a subscription to get it, and that's why the numbers are always going to be bigger than they would be on Sky, for instance. I think it just makes sense. I mean, the audience is there, the channel is there. It's just, it's a matter of getting the right partners together to make the right type of wrestling show, because, you know, the world of sport is a very particular type of wrestling show as well. I think you guys, like, when you did your special, really managed to, you know, bring in the kind of the new faster-paced wrestling with the old traditional, and I love seeing some of the vignettes of the older guys and that lady.
Those are great, weren't they?
Yeah, they were amazing.
I love those. Those are good. Yeah. There's a sense of, in that part of the world, for a pro wrestling fan, when you're privileged to be able to rub elbows with some of those guys, you get a sense of pride, how proud these men and women, Klondike Kate, for example, of their contributions. And, you know, meeting Marty Jones and Johnny Saint, Mark Rollerball, Rocco. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Some good dudes, man. What great storytellers and drinkers and good guys. But, boy, they were real. And, you know, they were the kind of guys that if they went into a pub somewhere and some big tough bastard wanted to try to whip the phony wrestler's ass, the big tough guy could very easily be humbled in front of his own people.
Oh, absolutely. Those guys were all legit, you know. And again, like when you have someone like Regal who come up when he was 16, 17 years old and he was getting beaten from pillar to post by these guys with love, you know, they liked him. But they were just showing him that this was the way we do this, kid. All of that, I love all that traditional stuff. I love all that way of coming up. I love the kind of respect that has. And, you know, as well, just talking about, like, today's wrestlers, like, again, I was privileged enough to be in the company of the wrestlers at this year's WrestleMania. So, you know, the guys and girls that weren't on the show or who had just finished their match. So there was the WWE had rented a whole kind of skybox there in Orlando. Is that called the Sun Life Stadium? And I got to observe Jim. And the guys and the girls from NXT who were watching the likes of Baron Corbin have his WrestleMania match were on the edge of their seats for him. They didn't know anyone was listening. They didn't know anyone was watching. There was no TV around. There was no, quote, fans, unquote, around. And it was amazing to see that every time, you know, he got hit or he hit somebody, like, they were feeling it. They were up cheering for him. And for me, as a complete outsider, to see that, like, that was fascinating as well, you know. And we all know there's competitive kind of, you know, jealousy and all that stuff goes on. I think a lot of that is healthy. But, you know, kind of respecting the business and respecting people in the business, I think that was very, very evident. And I don't think as well, you know, it's no coincidence that those guys are, you know, under the likes of Regal and Robbie Brookside and Adam Pearce and Steve Corino. And, you know, I don't think that's an accident that they react that way.
Yeah, Norman Smiley and
Terry
Taylor. Good staff. Yeah. Big Matt Bloom, the head coach.
And that's right.
Don't forget the brains behind the outfit. Sarah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Sarah D'Amato. Yep. She's the heartbeat of that group. Can you see that some of these kids, like, let's say a Finn Balor or a Becky Lynch, two kids from your neck of the woods that you know and you're proud of, you've been supportive for a long time,
I can see those people contributing to WWE long after their wrestling in-ring career has ended.
Yeah.
That's the kind of people that they're recruiting there now, and they're bringing up through their program. And so you don't just not only get out of some of those guys a long in-ring career, but when that ends, you make that transition and segue right into the post-wrestling career. And to me, that's encouraging as hell.
I agree. I mean, Becky and Finn, Becky in particular, you know, great wrestling brain. You know, they don't just go out and, you know, do what's asked of them, which of course they do, but they're able to contribute and they're able to figure out why I should be doing this now and why I should be doing that now. You know, and people would come to them and ask them, what do you think of, you know, of this or that? And I just think you're right, Jim. I mean, now is the time, you know, if WWE for me is so ripe for the pickings in terms of just people stepping up now.
Yeah,
you know,
is.
Like who's going to be the next batch?
Yeah.
They have unlimited amounts of hours to fill, both on the network and on their regular TV shows. Like, who wants it? Who's going to step up? Who's going to take that risk?
Okay, let me ask this question. Here's a question for you. How many times can you watch a television program and pick out the matches, whether it be featured matches or supporting matches, where you can recognize readily that there's one person, if not both, in the match, if it's a singles match, that is out to win match of the night? They're out to make sure that nobody's going to follow this shit. I am going to take the highest backdrops. If I'm doing the honors, you're going to get a hell of a win because I am going to fight your ass.
Yeah.
And you're going to beat somebody. And whether I go down or up or down, I'm going to give you great bumps, great hustle. I'm going to lay my stuff in. Sometimes on all pro wrestling, and I'm home alone, and I watch a lot of wrestling because I got control of the remote nowadays. I'd trade that deal, but nonetheless, that's how it is right now. I see it on all wrestling shows. Somewhere along the show, somebody phones some shit in. And somewhere on the show, you'll see somebody that had a match that wasn't the top of the hour or the bottom of the hour, for example, or wasn't a TV main event in one of the one-hour shows, and they're just on the show, right?
Yeah.
Segment two.
Yep.
Well, there's where you go out there and blow that son of a bitch away.
Exactly. There's an awful lot of looking back that's going on with this particular batch or whatever it is, these last 5 years or whatever, where people are looking back to see, am I the next, you know, Eddie Guerrero, right? Am I the next whatever? Like, I'm just looking for someone to be uniquely themselves, like just burst through, you know? You don't have to pay homage all the time. You don't have to, you know, do callbacks to 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago. Like, who is that person that's just uniquely themselves? And strangely enough, like someone like a Braun Strowman who's just coming out there and being, as he has tattooed on his arm, country strong. You know, you can say he's a hybrid of like a Steve Austin and a Brock Lesnar and a Big Show or whatever you can say. That's fine. But he's not trying to be somebody else, or he's not trying to be a homage to somebody else. He's just, for right or for wrong, he is uniquely himself at the moment.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's, for me, that's the foundation of wrestling. Like, you know, why do I pay my ticket price to go and see these people? Because they're uniquely themselves. I cannot see these people anywhere else.
Absolutely.
Or people like them.
Well,
so for me, that's, you know, if people can just to kind of burst through the glass ceiling for me, Jim, isn't so much in terms of opportunity or whatever. The glass ceiling for me is a personal creative glass ceiling. Like, can you figure out what makes you uniquely you and why people should pay to see that? And if you can, now you're onto something.
I have always had this pet peeve, and you've probably got a million of my bullshit pet peeves, but, you know, I'm not big on overthinking some things.
Yeah.
I just think the good Lord has made some things very clear.
Yep.
When all this went down with Jan in March, I really, you know, I'd mentioned it. I felt so lost.
Yeah.
And I felt so empty, and I had so much to do.
Yep.
And I was overwhelmed. And I just believe that, why don't we just table the book for a while? Let me kind of get my feet on the ground and, you know, let me tend to her situation. So, but it just didn't make sense. I mean, for me, after thinking and walking around and driving around and sitting in my chair, I just believe that this book is a testimony to a great marriage and a wonderful woman. Who played a very unsung role in my journey in WWE and beyond, and before and beyond.
Yeah.
And I thought, the opportunity for this book to be in somebody's hands, whether it be a man or a woman. Because there's a hell of a love story here in this book.
Absolutely.
Don't you think?
Yep. I couldn't agree more, Jim. You know, and it's the story of when you first met Jen, and then, you know, there's the, I don't want to give too much away, but like there was the challenges when you first got married.
Yeah.
You know, there was a series of challenges, actually one after the other. And you know, I think you turned to her and you say, you know, are you glad you married me now? And she never wavered one bit.
No.
You know? She was a woman with a plan. She knew what she was going to do. She knew what you and she needed to do.
Yeah.
And then as well, of course, you know, and people probably do know this, but they should know this, that, you know, Jan herself had some amazing insights and inputs into the actual book itself, as in, you know, you and I would talk and you say, well, I was talking to Jan last night and, you know, let's move this in direction or let's move in that direction. And, you know, her suggestions always made sense, Jim. You know, she obviously knew you better than anybody. And, you know, when she would read a section of the book, it was always a great thrill for me to hear the kind of feedback.
Every word she hung on. And that's one of my most vivid memories of her. That really is easy for me to conjure up or to recreate in my mind is, again, me coming to bed, she's sitting up in the bed, pillow behind her back, reading the transcript, our latest rewrite of our book, and with her pencil out, circling things, and just in a frenzy, you know. And she didn't want us to overuse the use of the F-bomb.
That's right.
I guess I got scolded on that a time or two, but it's a lot of her in that, and you know, my life's been so good, and I was, like I said, the only way I get through this deal, man, is I got almost 25 years with her.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. So I'm blessed with that deal. I'm blessed to meet you too, my friend. So I think we've got a good start for our week. I hope that folks will reach out to at Amazon, as you said, it's kind of the Amazon sort of the catch-all. Our book is available wherever books are sold.
Yeah.
And that includes Barnes & Noble. Yeah. It includes Books A Million, pretty much wherever books are sold. Yeah. Paul was telling me, I think, earlier that Kindle and ebooks and all stuff, I don't even know what it is, to be honest with you. But tell us more about that, because, Paul, you're more attuned to that stuff because of the Blood Red books. But our book is allegedly available in every platform.
Yep, it certainly is, and including the audio platform that I know a lot of people, Jim, are really, really excited about. I mean, the voice of our wrestling journey is going to read his own story, and it's going to be available on this week, Tuesday. Isn't that right? It's coming out at the same time.
Same time. It's available now. Audiobooks.com.
Available now, and I'm excited for that. Like, I want to hear that, even though, you know, you and I have read and gone over the story 1,000 times. I'm genuinely excited to hear, you know, how the voice of, you know, my wrestling journey reads his own wrestling story. It's just, it's like the perfect package. So it is, it's available, you know, anywhere books are sold, as in paper books, but it's also available anywhere that digital books are sold. So again, Barnes & Noble have their digital store. You have the iBook store, you have the Kindle store. So if you're on a reading device, just go to whatever your preferred digital store is, and Slobberknocker, My Life in Wrestling will be sitting there waiting for you.
It's funny that, that's great news. Good information. It's funny that our book is already developing a little personality.
Yeah.
Because it's, as I mentioned, it's, they dropped the My Life in Wrestling part. It's just Slobberknocker now. So I think what it says is that we're all on a first name basis.
We are. And, you know, it's such a superstar now. It's like Cher or Beyonce, Jim. It only needs a first name.
Cher. Now you're really dating yourself.
It's like a turnback time, Jim.
I heard you right there. I got it. Well, listen, I appreciate you taking the time to be with me and us. And I appreciate you staying up late where you are in Ireland. And, you know, we hope to have a – I just don't think it would be right if we didn't have a book signing in Ireland.
I'm with you there, Jim. I think we would get a colossal crowd. I think people would show up for you, and it'd be great as well.
I'll just use you to get my rub.
Well, I'm hoping for it to be the other way around. You know, it's funny. Sometimes on Twitter, people would say, are you going to be at a book signing with Jim Ross? And I'm like, yeah, for the one or two people who want to come and see Paul O'Brien, there's the star. I understand my place, you know.
you know your role.
I know my role, exactly. Yeah.
We all know our role. We all know role, buddy.
Yeah.
I appreciate you, your work. You're a genius at what you do, and you heard my voice, and you brought it to life, and I'm very, very proud of what we have. I'm glad we finished. I really am happy that we finished, and I didn't lay down, get the limber tail. I didn't get the limber tail on that deal. So, and folks, remember, again, Blood Red Turns Dollar Green is going to be big. It's going to be – there's some major things, if you smell what I'm cooking, and that's going to be big. It's going to be wonderful because if you read the three books that you can get on Amazon, for example, the trilogy, you'll see exactly what I'm saying. If you like crime dramas, if you like wrestling, you like the territory days, like a little nostalgia, little misdirection, the underbelly of certain things, you're going to dig the hell out of this, man. And it is, when it jumped off, it was like our book Millie with Mildred Burke, the Queen of the Ring. Yeah. The reason we're making a movie right now of Millie, called Millie, about Mildred Burke, based on Queen of the Ring, is because when I read it, it jumped at me and slapped me in the face, got me in a headlock, and I felt it and I saw it and I said, man, this is a goddamn book. This is a League of Our Own meets Boardwalk Empire.
Yeah.
This is good stuff, man. So when I read Paul's book, I'm thinking, damn, this guy's really accurate. And he's not even been in territory. He's researched this, just feel.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and then I said, well, if he can do that to characters that didn't never exist, I wonder what he could do to me.
Yeah.
So, and here's where we are. So, and the end result is our book. So, that's really good. Thank you, Paul, and have a great week, and let's keep each other informed of how things are going and enjoy the moment. How about that? Let's just enjoy what we've accomplished.
Exactly. We're going to bask for a day or two, Jim, but I just wanted to say, listen, you know, you took a risk on a guy from, you know, thousands of miles away to handle your life story. I'd be forever grateful for that. I hope I've done you proud. I hope the readers enjoy what we've done together with Scott as well. And I just want to say, Jim, that, you know, you've always had a good eye for talent, you know, in your line of work. And I couldn't be happier or more honored that you use that same eye then to pick, like I said, some guy out of the crowd from Ireland. And it's been an absolute pleasure for me. So thank you very much.
The Ross Report. The Ross Report.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as I did. I really appreciate Paul O'Brien staying up late in Ireland. That's kind of been our whole MO. I've stayed up some really late times, you know, where I'd call him at 3 or 4 in the morning my time, which would be mid-morning his time. And we had a lot of those conferences. And it never made any difference if it was a weekend or a holiday. He and I were together working on this book. And I'm so thankful that I got the courage to finish it, because I really had second thoughts, and I'm glad I didn't. So it's available right now, Slobberknocker, My Life in Wrestling. Amazon, one place to start. It's available wherever books are sold. Next time I'm going to be on the road doing Ringside with Jim Ross. I'm going to be on the road a lot this fall with book signings, and that schedule is going to be out soon. And you can keep up with all that stuff at my website at jrsbarbecue.com. If you don't think about it, you might want to bookmark it or wherever the hell you do that reminds you of that kind of thing. But we're going to be in Boston for Ringside with Jim Ross. I'll be joined by my sidekick from time to time, Jeremy Borash, JR and JB in Beantown on Saturday, December 16th. We'll be at Laugh Boston, everybody, the same weekend on Saturday that WWE will be in town on Sunday for their Clash of Champions. And tickets for our show in Laugh Boston are on sale now at laughboston.com. And that includes the pre-show VIP meet and greet photo op autograph thing. And then at the end of the show, we have our big Q&A. And there's no preconditioning on the Q&A. You ask what you want. We don't screen those kind of things. We think your common sense and your judgment is good. Now, I have had some, you know, they always said, you know, it's an adventure when you get a wrestling fan, a real big wrestling fan, a real diehard, a learned fan, when they get loaded with booze at one of our clubs, like Laugh Boss, it could happen, and they have a live mic, it's an adventure. And that's all I'm going to say. That's what you get. So, Laugh Boston,
on Saturday, December 16th. Hope to see you there with Jeremy Borash and myself. My YouTube channel is free, jrsvideos.com. Keep that in mind. I thank you guys for shopping at www.shop.com and at Ingles Markets throughout the Southeast. Ingles Markets, a wonderful company, family-owned. They're the nicest grocery stores I've ever shopped in. Ingles Markets throughout the Southeast. And a lot of my friends in Atlanta, Tony Schiavone was even telling me he goes to Ingles and gets our mustard. So, and I appreciate that from good old Tony. It's not a seasonal product. You know, you can, all of our products are good on stovetops in the kitchen, but they're really good on the grill. And the ketchup mustard's my favorite. But I'm biased as hell. Yes, I indeed am. So, but check it out. We have made, everything is gluten-free. It is all vegan-friendly. And there's no high fructose corn syrup in our products any longer. So there you go. Healthy and good. www.shop.com. Really appreciate you guys listening to the show and supporting our sponsors when you can, whether it be TrueCar, or DDP Yoga, whatever it might be. Doesn't matter. We appreciate it very much. And we appreciate them for keeping our show free. Remember to support Podcast One and download the brand new.
Well, I invented the term brand new. I took a kid in my dungeon and I put a brand new ass whipping on him.
Okay. Good for you, Stu. Good for you to check in every now and then, too. We don't want to forget about you. And Podcast One app, that app is at the App Store, by the way, and on Google Play. It's a one-of-a-kind app. And it's, no, you haven't seen anything quite like it before. I think you're going to really dig it. And you can connect with listeners of our show and more. There's a lot of neat things on this new app. So check it out at the App Store and on Google Play. I love it when you say Google Play, my boy. You can play with my Google anytime. Hey, easy now. Somebody's been the cooking sherry again. Mr. Barnett's on the Boone's Farm. Oh, my God. Look out, ladies and gentlemen. And remember, you go to Podcast One, podcastone.com, click on the Killer Deals button at the top of the right corner of the page, and then click on the Ross Report banner, put you right where you want to be. So coming up on Tuesday, Jason Powell has a much better voice than I. He will join me, and we'll talk about Hell in a Cell, Monday Night Raw, get a little update on what's going on in Impact Wrestling, Ring of Honor Wrestling, New Japan. Of course, on New Japan, you can see us every Friday night, Access TV, Josh Barnett and I, covering that big old G1 tournament. Hope you'll join us. So Jason Powell with me next week. Hope you'll be back as well. If you subscribed at Apple Podcasts, you won't have to worry about it because it'll automatically be downloaded into the device that you choose. So that's a pretty simple little piece of business. I really do appreciate you guys being with us this week. Thanks for listening about how we, Paul and I, kind of came together and writing this book. And some of the challenges we faced. But at the end of the day, I'm glad that we were blessed with the courage and the strength to finish. And I hope that you will enjoy it as well. So from my home state of Oklahoma, yes, I'll be at the brunch game on Saturday morning as the Iowa State Cyclones come into my hometown, play the Oklahoma Sooners in Norman, Oklahoma. It's my adopted hometown because my friends, my family's going to Westfield is going to say, wait a minute, I thought you were a Westfield Yellow Jacket. I am and always will be. But I now live in Norman. So I'll be there on Saturday. It's going to be fun. I might even go down to Ardmore on Saturday night and go to Oklahomania. I'm thinking I might just drive by and see my friends. There's a lot of guys down there I know. Oklahomania in Ardmore, Hardy Murphy Coliseum. That'll be this Saturday night. It'll be a lot of fun down in Ardmore, no doubt about that. But until then, ladies and gentlemen, from the sleepy streets of Chickasha, Oklahoma. The street lights are on, but they're flickering. As I get on my horse, I ride out of town, and I will say this one more time. So long, everybody!
Thanks for listening to The Ross Report. Download a brand new episode every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
Trump and the memo. I'm Ed Donahue with an AP News Minute.
Trust your FBI director on this.
President Trump is back at the White House from West Virginia.
Trust the memo, Mr. President. On the memo, sir.
White House officials say President Trump will clear the way for the publication of a controversial GOP-authored memo, despite objections from the FBI. The memo was prepared by Republicans on the House Intelligence Committee and is said to allege misconduct by the FBI in its investigation of potential ties between Russia and Trump's 2016 campaign. Shots were fired at Salvador B. Castro Middle School this morning in Los Angeles. Two students were injured.
The most critical was a 15-year-old male that received a gunshot wound to the head. However, we're placing him in critical but stable condition.
A female student is in custody, and the police chief in Los Angeles says they believe she is 12 years old. Police say a gun has been recovered. Another student, a 15-year-old, is in fair condition. I'm Ed Donahue.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Kevin Millar, we're all paying rent in Ohtani's world, right?
And the Dodgers world. Game is healthy. Game is good. And, you know, I get asked a lot, is that good for baseball? Yeah, it's good for baseball. This is definitely the team to beat, because that should be your next correction, Richie, is that is this World Series a bust for the Dodgers and Dave Roberts?
Hell yeah. Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.